So when I was sitting around yesterday, look, I found this on a Rutsheva that I liked. It's an essay written by Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson. And he writes, he says, he titles it, "When Religion is Based on Lies, It's Meaningless." And he has a subtitle, "Better an Ugly Truth Than a Beautiful Lie." And he starts off telling a story. He says, back when in Eretz Yisrael, a new immigrant could bring in ordinary household items totally duty-free. But if anything seemed to be that they were bringing it into resale, right, they would slap import taxes on it. Jack Levine, a new Ola, comes to the port in Haifa to claim his household goods that came on a ship, and the officer notices he's bringing in seven fridges. And the officer says, "Mr. Levine, we allow one fridge duty-free, not seven." So he says, "Oh, but let me explain to you. I'm really, really from. So what I do is I use one refrigerator for meat, one for milk, and one for parve." He says, "Okay, I'll let you sleep, but hold on. Remember that there's Pesach, and I am so from, right, that I need three others for Pesach." He says, "Okay, let's say I agree with that. That's six. What's the seventh? Why would you need a seventh?" And he says, "No, so I like a little bit of treif once in a while." And he says, "That is a paradigm." He says, "I'm going to tell you a story about a guy called Reuben Gonzalez, who was in the final match of his first professional racquetball tournament, and he was playing a repeat champion, and he had a shot at the championship. At one stage of the game, he makes an amazing, he calls it a kill shot, and it looks like it's the winner. And the referee says, "You're the champion." And a second later, Gonzalez turns and he says, "No, you didn't catch it. My shot skipped into the wall, but it hit the floor first. And for whatever reason, the rule was that he would lose his serve then, and he didn't win. And instead, the perennial champion won. When he walked off the floor, everyone turned to Gonzalez and said, "What's the matter with you?" And it said, they put his picture on the next issue of their national racquetball magazine. And the lead editorial said, "Why would someone do something like this? We've never seen this in any sport endeavor." He won. Why would he give it back? So they said, we asked him, and he said, no, you don't understand. It was the only thing I could do to maintain my integrity. It's not worth winning if I had to compromise integrity." I guess against the old rule that says winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. And he says, "I'm going to tell you that in last week's Parsha, the Torah teaches us the same lesson," he says, "in a powerful way." And he says, "People could read over these psukim and not notice that there's something critical there. He says, we again, in last week's Parsha, reviewed the signs of kosher animals, land animals. It must chew its cud, meaning, right, he says it ruminates partially digested food, returns it to the mouth for greater chewing, and then digests. And it has split hooves. Therefore, he says, we know a cow, a sheep, a goat, a deer, a gazelle, and even a giraffe are kosher. He says a donkey and the horse lack both of these features and then are not kosher. And then he says, and then we have the famous comments in the Chumash. There are four animals that possess only one of these signs and aren't kosher. The camel, a hyrax, a hare, and a pig. The camel, hyrax, and hare chew their cud, but don't have split feet. And the chazer has a chazer feet, so split, but it doesn't chew its cud, and so they are treif. And when the Torah describes these animals, it mentions first the kosher siman, and only afterwards does it mention the one it lacks. So he said, I want to ask two questions. Why does the Torah single out these four one siman animals? Why doesn't the Torah say we've got a requirement that for any animal to be kosher, it has to have two simanim? Right? It's got to chew its cud, and it's got to have split hooves, and therefore any animal that you ever see that doesn't have these two characteristics is therefore not kosher. He said, I want to question also, right? Why does the Torah specifically say the kosher before the non? Right? He said, if I were teaching a class and I wanted to make a point, I would teach my students, you know why it's not kosher? Here's the problem. Okay, and here's the thing you might confuse you. And he says, if you wanted to explain to someone why he's not an American citizen, you would not say to the person, you're not a citizen of this country. You wouldn't say, even though your parents were born here and you were born elsewhere. It's not really true, because if parents are Americans, yes, you can register your kids, but you're not automatic. He says, you would say, you're not a citizen because you weren't born here, notwithstanding that your parents were. And he says, I'm going to assume, or I'm going to point out, that there's got to be a specific reason for mentioning one that complies before the non-compliant factor. One of the Mefarshim points out, it was a lesson to teach us that whenever there's something we have to say that's negative, if there's something positive in the situation, enunciate that first, it's a great character builder.
No, that's not Shulman. This is regular ends, but I'm explaining to her. They are tested for the food, or when you spill something or food on the floor.
He says a clay yoker he says, was, he said, whose author was Rav Shlomo Ephraim of Lunchitz, 1550 to 1619, said, it's not only what these animals lack that made them unkosher, but it's also what they have. The one kosher sign that makes them non-kosher. He says the juxtaposition of the two, the pig, for example, having split hoofs but not chewing its cud, it's this juxtaposition that deems it to be non-kosher. He says, you know why? Having one kosher sign symbolically would allow these animals to deceive themselves and others, saying, look, we're kosher. Look at my kosher sign. So the Torah says, don't eat the camel because it brings up its cud. And does not have a cloven hoof. It is also and primarily the single deceptive kosher sign that makes these animals unsuitable for Jewish consumption. The Torah specifies these four animals and doesn't put them in the category of all other non-kosher because they have, as he would say, a dishonest type of simon that it could fool one into saying, oh, we're kosher, and that's totally deceptive. He says, of course, animals can't be hypocrites or dishonest. Animals are what animals are. However God made them, that's how they behave. Their physical characteristics may be symbolic of moral qualities, right? And that's why we eat the ones that have both. For somehow, These qualities have an effect on our psyche, like all food, which impacts the person who eats them. He says everyone has to struggle against unhealthy and immoral and non-kosher instincts, appetites, habits, addictions, and cravings. But he said, what's even more dangerous is the ability, right, to be dishonest about it, about who we are. He says, what makes me unkosher is not so much that I am not kosher, is deceiving myself and making belief that I'm good enough, I'm kosher enough. He says the true enemy of any religion, of any authentic relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is being dishonest with ourselves as to who we are. He says we know there are religious circles that strive on dishonesty. People and their leaders redefining what morally perfect is, right? And to ignore honesty. He said, we'll create rules to make everybody comfortable to fit in, right? And we'll sacrifice principles, right? We can say that the common refrain heard for many, many years is to feel Jewish, right? To say Jewish things. 6 matzah balls eaten with kishka makes me a good Jew. But if I decide to go to the Chinese restaurant for dinner tonight, it's okay. He said, this is not truth. He says, I can't make up my own rules, and I can't make up rules for me, my friends, and my community. It's all a facade. It's based on lies, and then religion loses its purpose. He says, we may not necessarily succeed in every struggle. We may, because we're human, fall by the side. We will attempt to subdue things that we've come up. There are a desire to do it, right? And there are times I may fail. But if I'm honest and if I'm truthful, I will never say that when I failed, it was okay. I can accept the fact that I failed. I can accept the fact that I'm still basically good, but I'm not going to justify what was wrong. He says, the common dilemma, people who are, quote, leaders, is that to gain popularity, right, very often integrity's got to be compromised. He says, one of the concepts we always have is Torah's MS. There's no spirituality without honesty. He said, I'm going to tell you a story again. In the mid-80s, researchers at Cleveland State University made a startling discovery. They conducted an experiment creating 2 fictitious job candidates, David and John. The candidates had identical resumes and letters of reference. The only difference was that John's letter included a sentence, sometimes John can be difficult to get along with, in one of the references. They then picked a number of personnel directors, and they asked them, if you were going to hire somebody, who would you hire? And you know who they picked? They picked John, who was difficult at times to get along with. The researchers wanted to know, how does this happen? And they said, the recruiter said, that little bit of criticism made John more human. It was believable. All of the comments that were positive were taken with greater weight because they didn't say this was God walking on water. He says, that's what the Torah seems to be saying. We show the fright when we admit that these animals have flaws, right? It makes it more believable who they are, what they are. He says, I'm going to tell you another story. And he seems that he loves to tell stories. He says, there was once a beloved emperor in a small country who was getting old, had no children, and he realized he would have to pick a successor. What he did was, he did something different. He called the young people of the kingdom together, and he said, I am going to choose one of you to be the next emperor. And I am going to give each one of you a seed today, a seed to plant. It is a very, very special seed. I want you to go home, plant the seed, water it, and come back here in a year from today. Show me what you have grown with all your efforts. I will then judge these growth, and I will choose who will be the next emperor. One boy was called Ling, and he got the seed. He went home and he told his mother the entire story. He got a pot, he got the best planting soil he could, and he planted the seed, watered it carefully, and every day he would watch to see what would happen. 3 weeks later, some of the kids got together and they mentioned about the great plants that were coming up. Ling went home and checked the seed. It was deader than a doornail. It grew nothing. 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, months went by. This was, as we say, a dud. Everyone else was talking about how they had a beanstalk or whatever else they had. But he didn't have a plant, and he felt like a failure. He felt that he had killed his seed. Everyone else had these amazing plants. But Ling said, the emperor said this was what to do, and I'm not going to alter in any shape, manner, or form. The year ended, and all of the young men, women, came to the emperor, and they brought in their plants. Ling told his mother, I'm not even going. I failed. She said, no. I want you to take your pot, and I want you to tell the emperor, this is what I honestly received. He felt like he was about to have the worst day in his life, and he was going to be totally embarrassed. But he listened to his mother. He said, I'm required to listen to my mother. They all came together, and everyone laughed at him. His empty pot. They said, what the heck are you? Couldn't you be imaginative? Couldn't you overcome the problem? The emperor came in, and he looked at the room. And he said, wow, look at the great plants. Trees, flowers you have grown. Wow, we're going to pick an emperor. Then the emperor spotted Ling at the back of the room and his empty pot. He said, come here, Ling. He said, oh boy, the emperor is going to point out my failing. When Ling got there, the emperor said, what's your name, young man? And he said, Ling. Everybody was laughing, and the emperor said, I want quiet. He looked at Ling, put a crown on his head, and said, you are the new emperor. He couldn't believe it. The emperor said, A year ago, I gave everyone a seed. I gave you specific instructions. But you know what I did? I gave you boiled seeds, which I knew would never grow. Every one of you improvised. You added another seed to your plant. You decided, I'm going to do one up. I'm going to make it work. There wasn't a bit of honesty in you. This gentleman was. He says, this is a metaphor for life. Each of us is given his or her own seed. We're given our body. We're given our mind. We're given situations. He said, the greatest tragedy is when we try to be somebody else, when we try to mimic others, because we don't like the seed the Emperor HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. He said, that's the key to life. Being honest, looking at your situation, sticking with the rules of the game that's set out in the Torah and the mitzvahs, and going ahead with that. When you do that, then you too can be an emperor, because he says you will be zeicha to discover within yourself the infinite light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he wanted you to light up. Okay. Okay, I like this work. Thanks for your time and thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Nice day. Take care. Bye bye.
Be well.
Have a great show.
Bye. See you soon.
Yeah.